More details are emerging today on the failed U.S. operation to rescue American hostage Luke Summers in Yemen. The American ambassador to South Africa says the U.S. did not know the hostage being held with Summers was South African peer Corky, or that there were negotiations for Corky's release. Corky's charity, Gift of the Giver, says it had successfully negotiated his release and he was expected to be freed within hours. That timeline collided tragically with another deadline. Al-Qaeda had threatened Wednesday to kill American hostage Luke Summers within 72 hours, and an Al-Qaeda fighter reportedly shot both men as the U.S. Special Forces raid began. Paul Pillar served as a senior intelligence officer with the CIA. He's now at the Center for Security Studies at Georgetown University, and he's with us now. Paul, welcome back to Here and Now.
Good to be with you.
And what do you think went wrong here? Were mistakes made, or was this just a very difficult operation, and sometimes they don't work out?
This kind of operation is always very difficult. You have the inherent advantage of the hostage takers of being able to apply in seconds lethal force to their captives. And even if you don't have, as we heard in reports about this incident, a barking dog revealing the presence of the U.S. commandos when they were still 100 yards away, the fact is it only does take seconds. So there's a long history in operations, rescue operations of this type, of not just the spectacular successes, and we all remember those, like the Israelis at Entebbe or the Germans at Mogadishu, but also some pretty tragic failures. Even the Israelis, who have had as much experience at this sort of thing as anyone and are probably as good as it gets in terms of their skill in carrying out such an operation, have had failures exactly like this.
But what about the fact that the U.S. was unaware of the negotiation that had been going on to release Pierre Corky, the South African?
Well, I don't know what the whole story was in terms of U.S. knowledge about the very existence of this captive in the same place as the American hostage. I suppose you can second-guess that there should have been more communication between the U.S. and South African governments, although I expect in this case it was more not so much the South African government but the private organization involved that was conducting the negotiations. So you can look at that as a whole, but I don't know if there's real fault to be made there.
Well, and what about the question that has been brought up again, which is should the U.S. consider paying ransom as other countries do to rescue hostages? Now, the defense secretary has come out and said we're not going to review that. And the British defense secretary has come out and said we're not going to review that either. We're going to continue to not pay ransom. But what do you think?
Well, the policy has been long established, and I think for very good reasons. You've heard it said many times, but it's true that it puts a price on the head of every American, or in the case of the United Kingdom, every Briton who is overseas, as a potential source of ransom. So you do encourage, by paying ransom, by acceding to demands, additional possible hostage taking, and you have to take with that principle the fact that you're going to have some tragic instances occurring. But the question that policymakers have to raise is, would the overall loss of life, the overall risk to their own citizens be greater or less with the change of policy? I think the current policy is the best we can do.
Still, a lot of countries do pay for hostages.
They do. And a lot of other countries have had a lot of their citizens taken hostage. You know, there's no school solution to this. I think for the United States, given the worldwide presence we have, given not just the official but the unofficial in terms of commercial, press, scholars, vacation travelers overseas, there is a significant vulnerability that has to be taken into account. And that's in addition to the U.S. as the superpower, as the executor of a lot of policies that necessarily become controversial, probably has more to worry about than a lot of other countries in encouraging additional hostage taking if we did deal in ransoms.
But even if money is not paid for a hostage, we are seeing more of these now, especially with the Islamic State or ISIS. Are they being encouraged to take prisoners, to take hostages, just by the amount of play that it gets in the media now?
Well, clearly with the group that calls itself Islamic State, they are using their taking of captives and the high publicity that they try to give to their handling and tragically the killing of several of them as a way of drawing attention to themselves, as a way of telling radicals in other countries, including in the West, that we are the place where the action is. It's not one of these other groups fighting in Syria. And that sort of thing is going to go on regardless of what our policy might be in terms of ransom or not ransom or negotiating or not negotiating. So that's an additional hazard that that we're facing.
Paul Pillar, I want to ask you about one more thing before we let you go, and that is we're expecting this week the release of this long-awaited Senate report on the use of torture by the CIA during the Bush administration. Do you have a sense of what it's going to say, and do you think it should be released? Because many people have come out and said, no, it shouldn't.
I think we've heard an awful lot about this story already, haven't we? Indeed, not just the overall contours, but a lot of the details as well. So I think one of the questions that we have to ask and members of Congress have to ask whenever we and they finally see this report is how much additional information has been provided to us in this report in terms of things that we don't know that is important for us as a public or for our representatives in Congress to make informed decisions about policy on things like handling of detainees. I'm not sure, well, we'll have to wait and see when we actually see the report, but I'm not sure whether that's going to give us that much more of an increment in understanding of this whole issue that, of course, has been out there and has been vigorously debated already for quite some time.
That's Paul Pillar, who served as a senior intelligence officer with the CIA. He's now at the Center for Security Studies at Georgetown. Paul Pillar, thanks for joining us.
You're quite welcome.